Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Over the past 70 years, the number of school districts in the United States has dropped from around 117,000 back in the 1930s to around 14,000 by about 10 years ago. That's an 88% drop. But here in Oklahoma, we still have lots of school districts, up to three times as many as states with a comparable student enrollment. According to my guest today, there are almost 300 school districts with fewer than 500 students from K through high school, and 29 school districts with fewer than 100 students. But school consolidation seems to have been one of the third rails of Oklahoma politics, with lots of talk, but not much true reform. My guest today has written a paper detailing $27 million in potential savings from superintendent salaries alone, with some common sense efforts to combine smaller districts. James Mackle is the Dean of the College of Education and Professional Studies at the University of Central Oklahoma in Edmond. He says he's written an early first step paper on detailing the need for serious study on the benefits and costs of school consolidation. His paper, Right-Sizing Oklahoma School Districts, has been receiving a lot of attention in recent days, and he joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Professor Mackle, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rich.
You know, school consolidation has been talked about in the state for as long as I can remember, and, you know, not a whole lot has ever gotten done about it. We've had a few districts that have consolidated, but not a whole lot. What was the reason for this paper now?
I guess part of it for me, the bottom line motivation is trying to generate ideas about how we can find money, more money, to put into classrooms to address some of the continuing issues that everybody seems to be aware of. The other part of the backstory for me is I realize we can only talk so much about continuing to generate new revenue through taxes. And so part of my motivation was to see if we could identify possible savings in other areas that could be transferred more directly into classroom use. And that put me back on the pattern of thinking about how our school districts in the state of Oklahoma are organized. With that, I began by examining how many students there are in the state of Oklahoma that we serve in grades PK through 12, and what other states look like that have a similar number of students. And I was really kind of surprised to find that we have about three times as many school districts in our state as do the other most similar states in terms of the similar number of students to be served. And so, even though I had thought about it for years and we've talked and heard for years about the idea of having maybe too many school districts in our state, this was the first time it became obvious to me that that does in fact seem to be the case if you compare what we're doing with other states.
In your paper, you show that the five states that have comparable enrollments, Oklahoma has a lot more districts, probably three times as many districts, I'd say roughly. And more schools, too. Now, the schools themselves, it's not that big a difference. I'm saying, you know, 1,800 versus 1,500 for most of these same states. And some states are large states like Utah, which is very comparable in area to Oklahoma. Other states may be a little smaller, but we do have a lot more districts.
Yeah, that is what I found, Rich. I found that Alabama, Louisiana, Kentucky, and Utah all have a similar number of students as those served in our state, about 700,000 students. And while the number of schools are similar in all of those cases, as you mentioned, the number of school districts is quite different since we currently have between 500 and 600 districts. These other states have somewhere between 175 to 225 districts.
Now, you know, there are certain issues on a federal level that are third rail for politicians to try to tackle. I think on a state level, school consolidation is one of those issues. Do you think there's a ready audience to really seriously talk about school consolidation in the state?
Well, I hope there is, Rich, except I realize it's really difficult. And I think that I articulated a certain amount of this in the paper. I am not criticizing any individual or any group of individuals in the state in terms of how they are doing their work for kids in our state. To me, this is a matter of possible savings and efficiencies that could be realized with some reorganization and some right-sizing of school districts, except that the problem is for those who live in these very small communities throughout our state. What happens is the school is the center of the community, and you know this, Rich. People identify with their school. That is the core of the culture of their community. And so if you think about combining a school in neighboring small communities, that is a real threat to people in these small communities for fear of losing their identity through their school. And so even though a system could be worked out, and they've done this in other states where all of the existing facilities continue to be utilized, the difference being that instead of having three neighboring communities all with an independent school district, they would join together and combine to be one school district with one district office administration core, which would save some cost. But again, it's a threat to small communities in our state. It's also difficult from lawmakers' perspective because they obviously are elected to office by constituents in their home communities. And so it's difficult for many of them who represent these small communities to advocate for doing something that would threaten their local small community.
But it looks like most states nationally have already done this. I read something in your paper said, you know, nationally, school districts have declined precipitously over the past 70 years, 88% since, say, about 1940. We had over 100,000 districts in 1940. And now in about, you know, as of 10 years ago, we were down to about 11 or 12,000 districts nationwide.
Right.
So, I mean, most of the United States has already done this.
I think that's true. There are still some who aren't convinced that it will save money to do this. And I know from talking to some of our elected and appointed officials here in the state, they have begun to examine what's been done in neighboring states that have undertaken more recent reorganization efforts, including those that occurred in Arkansas. And they are unsure of the exact amount of money that might be saved by undertaking such a consolidation effort. And yet the leading research in this field comes to us from a policy center at Syracuse University, and the evidence that they have compiled over time shows that the biggest savings can be achieved by combining very small districts. And in our state, we have very large number of very small districts. We have almost 400, 391 to be exact, school districts that have fewer than 1,000 students. We actually have 29 school districts in our state that have fewer than 100 students. And that's really where the literature and research would suggest that the greatest possibility for savings lie.
Now, you anticipate cost savings of about $27 million, and that seems like a lot of money. Now, of course, that's a pretty small percentage of what we spend on public education, but nonetheless, it's $27 million. Is that basically from cutting down on the number of superintendent salaries, upper administration?
The estimate I made is really fairly crude and rough, and that is what it's based on. It's based on the notion of not needing as many full-time school superintendents. And the notion of sharing administrative services, even sharing school superintendents between districts, has been discussed in recent years in our legislature. In fact, there has been some movement in passing legislation that would incentivize and motivate districts to explore doing that, although few have pursued that.
Now, another idea that's been out there and it's coming back is the idea of a county superintendent really operating as a superintendent for all the schools in the county. We did have county superintendents, but they were also just a part of an administration that included district superintendents.
That's right, Rich. At one time, we had a dual system of county superintendents and district superintendents. Several years ago, there was a fairly strong push by one individual who was running for one of the top offices in the state, and he was promoting the idea of going to a county school superintendent-only type of system. I guess any kind of system that is implemented, one would need to look at outliers that would need to be treated differently. And in the case of county superintendents, while that might work well in many parts of the state, it would work much less well in the large metropolitan counties such as Tulsa and Oklahoma County, where we have hundreds of thousands of students across anywhere from 10 to 15 different school districts. And again, the real savings that we might achieve are going to come from combining very small outlying districts, normally in rural areas of the state.
Now, that idea of a cost savings of $27 million, you know, if you're just looking at superintendent salaries, it seems like you'd have a lot more savings with more consolidation, even if you're still utilizing the same schools to an extent. I think when you get to high school, that becomes an issue. If you have four high schools of 200 students, maybe 150 students, it doesn't make very much sense to keep four high schools in a county, even if you have one countywide superintendent.
Yeah, that's right, Rich. And again, I don't want in any way to suggest that my paper and the thoughts I'm advancing have anything to do with questioning the quality of school superintendents in our state or the job they do. They all do a wonderful job. It's a very precious position that these people have very hard jobs and do them very well. Plus, I would also acknowledge that in a number of these very small districts, the superintendent is also the principal and the cafeteria worker and the bus driver, and they assume multiple positions. In fact, I found one case of one particular district where the superintendent has about five full-time jobs and basically is paid a stipend of $20,000 a year. And so I'm not suggesting that anybody is taking advantage of the system to make an exorbitant amount of money. But one way in my paper that I break it out is if you look at the salary of a superintendent divided by the enrollment of students in the district, in the largest districts in our state, that will compute to about $6 to $10 per student. In these very small districts, it computes to about $800 to $1,000 per student. And so, again, it's just an economy of scale that might be realized with the reduction of the large number of very small districts.
Are you advocating administration consolidation or actual school consolidation? Making really tough decisions about, especially in, say, western Oklahoma and rural areas or even southern Oklahoma, where you have a lot of small school districts with high schools, and making the difficult decision to create a larger high school of, say, a 500, 600, 700 kids, where you can offer more, important offerings for the student. I'm thinking of AP classes, more activities for the student within the school, just the benefits of having a larger enrollment.
Right. Well, I think that the local geography and other factors are going to have to be taken into consideration. And as you say, the western part of the state, there is such distance in miles between the communities that it's going to be more difficult. And again, you don't want to consolidate schools that will result in the young children having to ride buses half the day to get to and from school. That makes no sense. I think one thing that we've not fully explored that we could is how to use emerging technologies to improve and increase the quality of offerings we can offer to students, such as what you mentioned. There are technologies available to enable us to bring to even small outlying communities a lot of experts that can help kids in offering things such as advanced math and science courses. In my paper, I offer one example of how this might be undertaken, and the example I use is a county in eastern Oklahoma that currently has, 17 districts in the county, and it's a county that serves such a number of students that it could be easily reorganized in a way so there would be 3 rather than 17 school districts within this county.
And that's LaFleur. That's LaFleur County.
All the existing schools open.
Yeah,
just reorganize them around 3 different districts instead of 17.
That's LaFleur County is the example you use. And that's a pretty large county. So you're looking at a fairly decent sized geographic area. Transportation is not the best in that particular county as well. You have mountains within the county. So we're talking one road from, say, Tallahena to Heavener. So how would your example work? How do you anticipate that would work, say, in a place like LaFleur County?
Well, I think that the key to this whole thing is not for us to develop a plan at the exclusion of local officials. I think that what I would ultimately recommend is that our legislators provide incentives to encourage people to more seriously consider consolidating schools into fewer districts. And then I think we've got to ask our leaders at the State Department of Education, our other education groups, to work with local officials to figure out how to develop a plan that will work in their particular part of the state. That way they can take into account the geography, the distance, the condition and age of the existing facilities, and the costs that will be incurred for things like changing the name in terms of signage and stationery and that type of thing.
Yeah, but in your example, you know, you say three hubs, one in Spiro, one in Poto, and one in Heavener. I assume if you're keeping all those schools open, I mean, a lot of these schools, I mean, you're talking about total enrollments of 227, 228. You know, I totally understand that those communities want those schools, but are they, you know, what sort of service are they doing for their students in having a very small school open that may have, you know, at certain points, multiple grades in the elementary school, can't have a huge number of offerings for specialized classes at the high school level? How do you see that working?
Well, again, I think part of this is about the economy of scale and possible savings and efficiencies, except the other factor that's really important to keep in mind is just the quality of offerings within the school. And again, I think that one of the major reasons that we have continued to operate the way we have is just by virtue of history, tradition, and as you know, Rich, it doesn't matter where you grow up. Wherever you grow up, you've got your school, and then you've got rival schools.
Yeah, right down the road.
Just typically right down the road. And so it's not the easiest thing in the world to talk about bringing together those decades and sometimes centuries old rivalries in communities that sometimes vary culturally significantly. So again, it's not an easy thing to do, but in my mind, it's something that should at least be studied more seriously.
My guest today is James Mackle. He's the Dean of the College of Education and Professional Studies at the University of Central Oklahoma, and the author of a paper which has been getting a lot of publicity over the last few weeks on right-sizing Oklahoma school districts, in which he advocates seriously looking at the idea of 1,000 students in a district sort of being the cutoff. So your study looks at basically superintendent salaries. Can you maybe talk about maybe some of the other ancillary areas of administration that you could see eliminating some of the duplication might result in additional savings?
Transportation costs, again, if purchasing equipment, large purchases when done in a combine or in a way that uses a consortium rather than individual small units, there tend to be savings that can be realized because you simply get better deals by volume. And so those would be some of the examples of savings I think that could be realized as a result of reorganization.
What about a lot, you know, there's certainly a lot of reporting responsibilities that every school district probably has. Is there any sort of duplication of paperwork and regulatory expenditures that a larger district has an advantage over a small district?
Well, again, the large districts, I think in many cases, they have to expend an extraordinary amount of staff time to compile and file reports to the various different compliance agencies at the state and federal level. On the other hand, though, small districts in many ways are required to make the same reports, even though they have fewer students and fewer staff to do the work. And so, again, I think that's something that's got to be looked at on a case-by-case basis.
Earlier, we were talking about the impact on communities that might lose, say, a local high school, and they would only have an elementary school or a middle school instead of a high school. What sort of impact was that likely to have on communities? Is there a way of mitigating some of that?
Well, again, I think it can only be done with the inclusion of local leaders. You're not going to be successful in enacting a plan for this type of thing and just giving it to people and forcing them to do it. In order for it to have the best chance of working, you need local leaders to be involved in developing the plan. I think a framework could be laid out that would be basically a template to be followed But then a lot of the decisions need to be made by the local community leaders working with one another with the neighboring communities.
You know, you talked about this 1,000 student threshold. I was actually looking at some of the counties, say in far western Oklahoma and some even in southern Oklahoma. The full counties don't have 1,000 students within within all of their combined districts. Is that a hard and fast rule, or do you think that, you know, maybe a county school is the best option for some of these more sparsely populated counties?
Well, again, I think that nothing should be a hard and fast rule that is applied across the board. I think a general approach should be taken, but there will need to be some exceptions made, such as what we discussed with the idea of a county superintendent system. That might work for most of the state. It won't work for every part of the state. Specifically, that kind of a system won't work well for Oklahoma City and Tulsa, because there are simply too many factors, too many students, too many existing districts. I think the other thing that's got to be taken into account is the culture, the particular culture of the community. And, you know, there are certain subpopulations of students that are being served in urban, rural, suburban schools in our state, Native American students, for example, who have very specific needs, whereas a local small school can address those a lot more efficiently and better than they could in a larger system, simply because some of those kids need so much individual attention. And there's also a cultural awareness and a cultural competence that's needed in order to serve those children and their families well. So, again, I would say you can develop a system, but then it's going to have to be modified based on a variety of factors related to geography, miles between schools, cultural factors, and things of that nature.
Yeah, you know, when you just look out in some of our western counties, there are large land areas. I was looking at, say, Alfalfa and Beaver County. You know, there's only three or four districts within them, but together they don't add up to 1,000 students. And if you were talking about combining every student in the county, you're still looking at less than 1,000 students, and you're looking at travel distances of 50, 60, 70, 80 miles.
Right, which would be that's not reasonable to think about doing to kids. So,
I know this is outside the scope of your paper, but, you know, when you were talking earlier about, you know, having virtual AP classes, maybe that would even meet in your local high school, but it's taught virtually. Is this a new option for some of our western counties and some of our more sparsely populated schools?
Well, Rich, I don't think any of these ideas, the idea of distance delivery of curriculum is not new. When I first started my career back in the 70s, I know that there were fiber optic networks being developed to deliver curriculum to schools across the state, as well as many other western states that enjoy great geographical diversity and a lot of wide open spaces. So the idea of it's not new. I think that what's different is the technologies continue to advance at such a pace. We know that there are lots of students in our state who are now benefiting from virtual schools. And while I think many people have some concerns about 100% virtual education for PK through grade 12 students, certainly a portion of the curriculum could be delivered via various technologies, especially in instances where local schools and districts don't have the expertise in terms of advanced math and science instructors.
Well, let me ask you, you have probably been getting lots of reaction to this paper, which is really, I think you would admit, it's just sort of a beginning starting point for starting conversations. What are some of the conversations you started?
Well, some of the conversations, I've heard from a lot of people who have said, what you suggest is common sense. We've been talking about it for 30 years, and yet nobody's ever done anything about it. That's probably the most common reaction I have heard. But I've also heard from some who have told me that these ideas might be dangerous because they represent a real threat to the many wonderful, very small schools in our state, including those that serve specialized populations of students. And some of these individuals point out how the small size of their district is part of their ability to know and serve well the children and families in their districts. And again, I appreciate that, and I've seen evidence of that myself. And so I can't say that that's not accurate, because in a way it is. I guess part of it comes down to what can we afford. And, you know, again, in Oklahoma, we've known for years, right, that we're not paying our teachers well enough. This is not news. We've seen a severe teacher shortage coming for years. And yet, how long has it taken us to do something about it? You know, I guess that's, again, part of my motivation is just to say, let's have a serious conversation about these things. And rather than dismiss it because it's going to be hard politically, let's have an honest conversation and really dig down and look at some numbers and see if it might be done and how it might be done.
Yeah, well, certainly, while teachers received a raise this year, the actual amount of money going into the classroom did not change by that much.
A good point, Rich. And, you know, the teachers are telling us now, and I think our elected leaders know this, in talking to several legislators recently, they have told me that they see a need to continue to address increased funding for schools in Oklahoma. I've even had some tell me, you know, I'm not sure there's an appetite to do anything with the ideas that you forward in your paper here, but we do recognize that there is a great need to address the issue of more funding for reducing class size, increasing instructional material expenses, and overall improving the conditions, the learning conditions for children, and the working conditions for teachers and school leaders.
You mentioned this paper was basically a first step. What's the next step in your mind? If we're really going to examine whether reducing the number of school districts in the state is a worthy thing of study, what's the next step in your mind?
Well, you know, again, I think that what I am offering to do and am willing to do is to continue the conversation with anyone who wants to have it. I do know that our legislators are working hard. I know that from talking to one of our Senate leaders that there is a commission that's being formed to study the state school funding formula and to try to find ways to address how to improve funding for all schools in the state. And so, again, I think that what I have accomplished is being accomplished in terms of raising awareness and maybe increasing the intensity of some of the dialogue and conversations. I don't have any definite plans for next steps and what I might do, except I do know that I am in the fourth quarter of my career after almost 45 years, and I love what I've done. I love being a teacher. I love my job now, except I don't have a lot longer before I pass the baton to my younger colleagues. And so I guess I'm open to doing whatever I can do to be a strong advocate for public education for kids and families in the state of Oklahoma. And but how that will look and what I might do in the next year or so, I just don't know, Rich.
James Mackel, we appreciate your time today. Thank you very much for joining us.
Rich, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
James Mackel is the Dean of the College of Education and Professional Studies at the University of Central Oklahoma in Edmond and the author of the paper Right Sizing Oklahoma Districts, Examining District Size, Enrollment, and Superintendent Compensation in Oklahoma School Districts. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.